Next is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 11th chapter, text 18, given in Newcastle, England, on November 7th, 1999.
Before I read the verses, I'll just quickly set the context, because some of us haven't been regularly reading this chapter. Who is speaking to who? This is Vritrasura speaking on the battlefield to Indra, and they're engaged in hand-to-hand combat. If you remember from reading Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a great devotee named Chitraketu who was cursed by Mother Parvati to become a demon in his next life, and he became Vritrasura. But he kept his spiritual qualities. So it's a strange case. He's a demon fighting the demigods, but he's more of a devotee than they are. So here we'll see in two verses. In one verse, he's praying very ferociously of how he wants to kill Indra. And then in the next verse, the verse for today, we'll hear a very different mood. Verse 17, Vritrasura says, "You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and the other leaders of the ghosts, along with their hordes." Text 18. "But if in this battle you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to the other living entities, such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narada Muni." Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur sings, "Echai gosai yar mui taradas tan sabara pada renu mora pancha gras." I am the servant of the six Goswamis, and the dust of their lotus feet provides my five kinds of food. A Vaishnava always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous acharyas and Vaishnavas. Vritrasura was certain that he would be killed in the battle with Indra, because this was the desire of Lord Vishnu. He was prepared for death because he knew that after his death he was destined to return home back to Godhead. This is a great destination, and it is achieved by the grace of a Vaishnava. Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nistar Payecha Keva. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by a Vaishnava. In this verse, therefore, we find the words manasvinam padaraja papatsye. I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. The word manasvinam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful, thinking of Krishna, and therefore they are called dhira. The best example of such a devotee is Narada Muni. If one receives the dust of the lotus feet of a manasvi, a great devotee, he certainly returns home back to Godhead. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Ti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pastata De Satarane. There's a reference to this purport in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you've looked at, when you look at Srimad Bhagavatam, you may not remember right now, but you may, I'll remind you. There's the table of contents, and Prabhupada's books have an unusual feature, which you'll hardly see in any other book. There's the table of contents, Table of Contents usually just has chapters, and the chapters may have titles, so then you'll see the title of the chapter. But Prabhupada also has, within the particular chapter, say this is chapter, what are we reading? We're reading chapter 11. So this is called The Transcendental Qualities of Bhrtasura. So within it, there are a number of subheadings. And he started this in the first canto. And I think by this time, he wasn't doing it himself anymore. His editors were doing it. And there are little subheadings. They don't provide a rigorous overview. They're just kind of at random. They cover certain topics. And so it may be that you'll be reading a purport and it's not referred to in these little subheadings. But anyway, today's purport does fall under one of those. Just as sometimes you'll be reading a purport and it may be covered by an illustration. And you can go and look at the picture and it will enhance your reading of that purport. So today's purport, we can get a real focus on what he's writing about because it's stated here. And so it's referred to as Bhrtasura desires the mercy of great devotees. And that's what this purport is about, if you had to summarize it. He's very intelligent and he's very devoted, and he wants to go back to Godhead. Therefore, he says that if in this battle you kill me, that's all right. That would be the will of God. But I desire the mercy of the devotees. So we've heard this many times, but in one sense we can't hear it enough. You can't get Krishna's mercy without the mercy of the devotees. So let's consider, what are the different ways we get the mercy of the devotees? And how can we get it? Well, the first way is that they introduce us to Krishna consciousness. Most of us are not devotees already. That's a great event in our lives, is that we come in contact with the devotees. Devotee doesn't mean only there's only one devotee in our life. There are numbers of devotees. They can be described as different kinds of gurus or servants of God or Vaishnavas. You know, there are divisions like Vartma, Pradaksha, Shiksha, Diksha, gurus, and so on. Or you can say great devotees, little devotees, but all sincere devotees who help us in spiritual life are very important for us. So they introduce us to Krishna consciousness and they maintain us in Krishna consciousness. And of course the question may be raised, why so much emphasis on the saints or the teachers? Why not just have one who introduces you, and then after all you're a soul, so then you develop your relationship with God? Why all the in between persons? And that there are two answers to that that occur to me. One is that this is required because it is so stated by the Lord himself. This is how he wants us to come to him, through his sincere agents. And the other answer is that the agents or the representatives of God, they do bring you your relationship with God. It's not like they remain permanently the only way you go to God and you never develop your own direct relationship with Krishna. But they help you stand on your own feet and become a devotee and learn how to become a devotee. It's by their mercy you become a devotee. but you never go without their mercy. So Krishna wants us to take this path of serving the pure devotees. And we can never minimize the effect that they give to us. That's a great mistake. If we become a little puffed up over the very culture of spiritual life that they have given us, and then minimize their importance in our lives. We've seen this happen sometimes. I heard a devotee some time ago who began to minimize Prabhupada, as he says here, our spiritual master, the founder Acharya. And then he was speaking about Krishna and Radha Krishna, and the words sounded so hollow on his lips, because we are not entitled to speak of Krishna or to utter Radha Krishna except as we receive it in disciplic succession. Otherwise, to quote that little story, Punar Musika Bhava, as the sage said to the tiger, again, we become a mouse. We revert to what we were before we met the pure devotee. So they show us everything. They show us just like a father. They show us how to clean ourselves, how to eat, or a mother, how to dress. They educate us in every step of spiritual life. And as we grow up, they're pleased at our advancement in spiritual life. And whatever we do, even if we do something wonderful by Krishna's grace, then we bring it back to the spiritual master for his credit, or for the devotee's credit. We don't leave their lotus feet. To give the material example, even say immaterially, it's quite possible that the son can become even greater than his father. So then if he's a good son, he will bring back to his father whatever wealth or education is be given and give credit to his father. You're a very great person. Like Prabhupada at the beginning of the Krishna book, he gave credit to his father. He said, by his grace, I became a pure devotee of Krishna. So if spiritually speaking, if by the grace of the Vaishnavas, if you become a Vaishnava, then you will remember that they are your sustenance. I'll ask some of you to say something, and maybe then I can elaborate on it. You can give me some ideas that may have occurred to you while I've been speaking. Can anyone think of other things that we receive from great devotees, or how we receive them, and thus how this is necessary for us going back to Godhead? Okay, Ras?
One thing I was thinking of is how we get the example of how they do things in the circumstances.
Huh.
That's something we can try to do for example for us in our own lives. You know, it's helping your identity of the majority of things that Prabhupada did in certain circumstances.
Yes. It's very important what you just said is that from devotees we can learn how they did things in certain circumstances. One reason this is important is that, say, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it teaches everything under ideal circumstances. For example, dealings between husband and wife, or dealings with a king and subjects. It's all described in terms of an ideal Vedic society and culture. So when you don't have that, then you have what's called time, place, and person. The one is, you could say, absolute, the way it should be, and the other is a compromise. So some foolish person might say, well, why compromise? Let's do it the absolute way. But you can't do it the absolute way. You have to compromise. So when conditions are less than ideal, well, how do you compromise? So the teacher, the devotee, he'll teach you according to circumstances, specifically how he did it, so that it will be as Krishna conscious as possible. There was an example of Prabhupada was teaching that, and his servant Suti Kirti asked, what's the difference between, I can't remember it exactly, it's in one of those little memory books, the difference between compromising a principle and breaking a principle. And Prabhupada was quiet for a while, and then he said, that requires intelligence. Which would mean that according to each circumstance, he might say something different. So they teach us the dynamics of individual relationships. And say by studying the life of Prabhupada, the more of those incidents you accumulate, you can think of how to act moment to moment in emergencies and in particular situations, and not just have a few rigid formulas of how a devotee acts. But the essence we can get from Srimad Bhagavatam, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna, and all the rules and regulations should follow that. So that's a good point. Yes, Kirti?
Yes.
How to serve Krishna? Oh, you mean what you had is similar to Bhakti Ras?
Yeah.
The particulars. Yeah, showing an example of particulars. We don't have to guess, because they showed us. More? Yes. Sridhar. Yeah, there is such a thing. There are such examples of devotees praying, not just for something for themselves, but praying for others. And so this is a way that devotees benefit the conditioned souls by our devotional activities, such as preaching and spreading Krishna consciousness. And just by prayers for Krishna to please help other devotees and help the conditioned souls, this can be done. Because it says here at the end, if one receives the dust of a lotus feet of a mani svi, he certainly returns home back to Godhead. It's a very powerful thing. So he's asking for it. At this moment, he doesn't say exactly how he intend or would want to get it. But we read in the Nectar of Devotion, it says by the by the good intentions of the devotees, by their words. And there was three things, three ways that a devotee could greatly benefit another soul. But they indicated such power that even by his good intentions, like a devotee like Narada, he just saw those two intoxicated sons of the demigods. Just by his good intentions, he cursed them, but he indirectly blessed them to meet Krishna. So just by his good intentions, then Krishna thought, oh, Narada wants this to be done, so I will have to bless them. I'll give them my darshan because Narada wants it. If we can win the favor of a great devotee, then our own good fortune is assured. And what do they want from us? They just want us to be sincere, not hypocrites, and to be faithful and do the best we can in Krishna consciousness. Then they will be pleased. We make these vows at initiation, and it may seem difficult sometimes to keep them. The four rules, 16 rounds in the age of Kali. But if we can follow these, surely this is the foundation of pleasing Srila Prabhupada, and who formulated this. Of course, he got the general direction coming down to cyclic succession. But he formulated it into the minimum of 16 rounds and kind of boiled down all sinful activities into these four rules. So we can just be faithful, then we'll get his pleasure and go on submissive, remaining submissive to his instruction. Without being either artificially fanatical about it or sentimental about it beyond our realization, or being in any way minimizing or offensive to his great contribution. Through Prabhupada's books, and we get to meet all these great souls. Anyone else think of how it's through the devotees' mercy that we get the mercy of Krishna? Thank you, Ross.
Devotees give us a practical, tangible, and sort of encouragement and support.
You seem to be referring to not just the devotee, thinking of the devotee as being on a planet many light years away, but as almost contemporaries who we can live with and know in our lives. And there's certainly that dimension. That's what's meant when we're told live with devotees, or you should associate with devotees. It does mean, on the one hand, that you can be alone and read about Narada Muni, but it's pretty hard if in Newcastle or London the only devotee you know is Narada Muni. And all the other people that you meet, you know, hour after hour, are more like Ravana. So the quote average devotee is a source of, or ordinary devotee, of friends, great source of encouragement. Yeah, because just from hour to hour, almost from day to day, we may feel really discouraged, and we just express it when someone says something. Yes, I went through that. Why don't you try this or something? It is very helpful. Yes. Huh. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. The devotees, they sometimes don't want to accept service. There's that example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that devotee who wanted to serve the Vaishnavas, and he knew how powerful it was, and he went to serve that one Vaishnava who was of a lower caste, and so the lower caste Vaishnava wouldn't let him serve him. I can't remember their names right now. But so he hid, and then when he saw that man and his wife finished eating and threw their mangoes away, then he went out and got their remnants, and he ate their remnants as a kind of service. He wanted to worship their feet and eat their remnants. And Lord Chaitanya, to illustrate your point, knew this, and he gave him mercy that he didn't give any other devotee. All the devotees they always wanted when Lord Chaitanya went into the temple and he washed his feet, they would love to take the water from his feet, but he never let anybody do it. Again, the point of service, he didn't like them to do that. But then when this devotee went to Jagannath Puri, he let him do it because he knew. He said that you always like to serve the Vaishnavas. So the Vaishnavas may not want to serve. We may have to find ways to get that service, personal service. But if we do it, then it's like Krishna will be pleased with us. More? Yes.
Well, I think the same idea that it's very difficult to depend on Lord Krishna at all times. That's why not the implication of the body. But I personally find it a lot of work outside of it. Very easy to forget Krishna and only are not the implication of the body. So it's so important for us to be able to forget the body and be with the body, because when we are with the body, it's immediately our consciousness is still in the memory of Krishna.
Yeah.
So I can see so much mercy having the body around us.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what degree of advancement they have.
Yeah.
Only if they have some kind of consciousness about Krishna, really, I think, assist that in the whole.
I see. Yeah, you have three young children. They're either talking about Krishna, probably, or if they're not, then you have to talk to them about Krishna. You have to be a good example, or they're a good example to you. They put you on, keep you on your toes, so they're devotees too. So it's a way to remember Krishna at every moment when you're with devotees. Therefore, Prabhupada created an international society. He stressed more than being alone or just taking Krishna consciousness and trying to apply it without a society, that there be some kind of concerted effort for the members, and then for those who hadn't heard anything about Krishna, to give them an opportunity to hear about Krishna. We should not think of ourselves as devotees. When we talk about these things, we should think of others as devotees and trying to serve them. We shouldn't think of ourselves as being very realized in who Krishna is, but if we at least have aspirations for these things, then it's very good. This particular these particular sections, this very fascinating section that a big demon is more advanced than the demigods, because the demigods are, they're trying to keep their kingdom, although they're devotees, they want to keep their heavenly kingdom, and the so-called demon, he wants to go back to Godhead by being killed by the devotee. It kind of boggles your mind to try to understand what the position is, but at least it shows the possibility of complacency, of thinking in the role that I'm a devotee and someone else is a demon, so I must be better than them, whatever I do. But here's the person in the body of a demon and practically acting as a demon, but in his heart, he just wants to get out of this material world. So we'll read in the verses that come, he says to Indra, come on, let's fight. And you're an agent of Krishna. You kill me. And then, at your hand, I'll think of Krishna, I'll go back to Godhead. And then you'll get what you want. You'll get your heavenly kingdom. And Indra, he's into that. He said, yes, I want to defeat you. But Indra, simultaneously, he wants the shelter of Vishnu. So everybody gets what they want, but the one has a higher aspiration than the other. So we shouldn't want some kind of niche, a material niche within Krishna consciousness, something too comfortable. We should be trying to go higher, to whatever it takes to go back to Godhead. And certainly this is the essence of it. It's the mercy of the Vaishnavas is required. So we should inquire around how to get it. If one obstacle is that we've all been in the contributions, a lot of devotees have been speaking positively, which we all want to hear, about going forward and meeting devotees and serving them. But one obstacle we find is that we feel offensive towards devotees. We have fault-finding tendencies. So what about that? One thing is, it's not that you have to associate with all the devotees. If you find that some devotees provoke this fault-finding tendency in you, then you can certainly find some devotees who don't provoke that, who inspire your desire to serve them. If you can't find any devotees who inspire you, then you're a sad case and you're like, what can be done? Then maybe you just should sit and read Prabhupada's books and chant Hare Krishna and try not to be an offender. But if there are persons who bring out the fault finding in you, they may be pleasing Prabhupada and Krishna also in their way, and you have to then think within yourself, all right, this devotee is serving and I want to serve, but I can't get too close to that devotee. He or she and I, we don't get along so well. So this is a practical kind of attitude. Of course, another attitude towards fault finding might be to just say you should overcome it completely, but I find it's not possible for myself always. And that's another practical remedy. And it's also supported by Shastra. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the third canto talks about there are different kinds of Vaishnavas. And he's talking about mixed Vaishnavas, mixed in the mode of passion and ignorance, And he says that you don't have to associate with them, although you should honor them. But even if they are not mixed devotees, they may not be like-minded with you, but you should save yourself from offense by these various methods of whatever it be, restraint from mixing with them, and restraint from using your tongue in bad talk, restraint in the mind of thinking about them in ways that you are fault-finding, and then certainly restraint from a corporal attack on their body. Those three offenses were brought out in the pastime with Bhrigu Muni. Remember? He committed the mental offense against Lord Brahma, verbal offense against Lord Shiva, and corporal offense against Lord Vishnu. So we should be very careful against offense, not do like Lord Bhrigu, like Bhrigu Muni, and just go right ahead and offend them and see what happens. Then you'll get the opposite of what's described in this purport. Instead of the mercy of the Vaishnava, you'll get the greatest disfavor of the Lord.